No, Bad Boy as a record, it's just like a record for everything, you know, start of podcast. Like, it's fantastic.
That song was My Money, My Problems by Mace, and two guesses for which team it's about, but we'll talk about it later. Oh, my God. Hello, everyone.
Mace with the dollar signs in there, too.
Yeah. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Final Play Podcast. This is round 7 of the Telstra Premiership for the NRL. An extremely interesting round for a lot of reasons, really, actually, this week. Although not so much with the first game, the Panthers and Rabbitohs. I mean, for me, Panthers were pretty comprehensive, 20-12.
Yeah, one of those, I don't know, I guess one of those games where sort of, I guess the scoreline, it could have really blown out. Penrith probably should have put a little bit more on South, especially at the end there, once they'd had a couple of people sent to the bin. I think Roberts got sent to the... and then, yeah, right near the end, Latrell Mitchell got sent to the bin as well inside the last 10 minutes. So South, I think, you know, to their credit, did fairly well to sort of keep it close to where they, you know, to where they are, and be, you know, be as close as what they, you know, as what they were, you know, 20 points to 12.
Yeah, they did. I mean, I agree, they did. I thought 8-0 half time, which isn't a big scoreline, but I thought Panthers were going to run away with it. But I guess fortunately for them, for South, I guess they did fight back in it. The Panthers are just one of those sides that I don't know. I don't get excited watching them personally. I don't think like they're not like a for me it's Melbourne, for you it's Cowboys, but just like a team that excites. They just do their things and then just happy then just to get the win, if you know what I mean. That's how I feel like when I watch them.
Absolutely.
They do everything well.
No, that's right. Yeah, they're just not that. Yeah, not the excitement machines at this point in time. Sort of get you right out of your seat and one of those teams where you're looking forward to sort of watching every week.
Yeah. I'm with you on Coruscant. I know you've mentioned him a few times. I think. That's to me. I mean, yeah, it's only round 7, but I think it was the buy of the season. He's got a lot of Dally M points. He's a phenomenal tackler. He's steadied the ship for Cleary, and then Cleary just does his work.
No, that's right. Yeah. And that's I think that's helping Cleary a lot. You see Cleary's face was looking a little bit funky throughout that game. At the start of the week, he had cellulitis, which is like a bacterial skin infection, and it just blew his face up. He couldn't see out of his eyes, and he sort of got that to calm down, but you could see he had a massive big Band-Aid like right in the middle of his nose there. It just didn't look like it affected him at all. Like, no. You know, the last few weeks, he's just had the ball on a string, and you know, like they're just doing. They're doing what they need to do to get wins.
I just think,
and that's only going to be good come the finals at the end of the year. Obviously, that's probably not going to be great for for and against if they're sort of not putting sides away with big scores. But all you got to do is put the W's on the board, and that's all you can do.
And that's why I think. I mean, this is speaking of Coruscant. I think because he's playing so well. Jerome Luai, he's not playing bad, but it's not like he's doing, you know, anything. He's just doing the right things at 5'8". Like, if he was playing another team that wasn't going great, he probably wouldn't be 5'8", personally. But, you know, he's just doing what he needs to do. Because Coruscant's just, yes, it's Cleary's team, but Coruscant, just to me, is just running a little bit, running, like, as a dummy half should, he's running that side.
He's controlling the tempo of the game.
It's ridiculous. Like he's just Manly. I don't think they realised what they had in him, or if they did, they obviously couldn't afford it because of the money.
I think that was part of it as well. Yeah, Manly's got a few sort of large contracts there at the moment too, and they must just not have had that spare sort of extra large amount to try and throw at Appy to sort of keep him there.
Two sin bins again. Do you don't mind seeing a lot of sin bins? Because obviously it's going to keep happening.
It's going to keep happening. For you're not seeing a lot of sort of, you know, whether it's the repeat infringement, you're obviously seeing, you're seeing it more for the fact of, you know, slowing the play, the ball down, try scoring opportunities, those sorts of things like that. So, a lot of it's, you know, holding down, or, you know, a little bit of a yank on the ankle when they're trying to get up to play the ball. Look, it's going to have to sink in sooner or later that these are the rules that they're abiding by this year, and you simply cannot cost your team to have 12 men on the field, because the score lines can get away from you very quickly, and it's extremely hard to wrestle momentum back, especially after you've just had 12 men on the field, and it just makes it too hard to chase. Now it makes it too hard to chase the games now. Like you just got to have so much go your way to be able to come back from, you know, from any sort of deficit now.
Wow. Speaking of deficit, the next game was Storm and Warriors. Look, the Storm pretty much ran away with that game. Clearly it was 50-6. It was 22-0 at halftime. It was
blasted. But in saying that though, New Zealand, like the Warriors, it was all them in the first 10 minutes.
They had
a try denied to Patrick Herbert. I think it was in the eighth minute. Like in that first 10 minutes, that they were unlucky not to be up, you know, 4 or 6-0, if not more. Like they were putting a lot of pressure on Melbourne's line. Just maybe that little bit of lack of execution on the part of New Zealand. Like, you know, you've got your steady head there in Blake Green. Whether it's just that little bit of lack of creativity. Tuivasa Sheck is, you know, everybody knows what you're going to get with him, but he's not a super threat with the ball in his hands.
No, exactly.
In the attacking zone, like, you know, you don't have to worry about a kick game or anything like that. Like he's extremely elusive and he's very powerful, but yeah, you have to watch him hitting gaps and things like that. You don't have to worry about him putting a little dink in to set up a dropout or anything like that. Addo Carr and Kemba Marlow were back for both sides in this, which, you know, sort of two star wingers, I guess. Like Kemba Marlow probably hasn't really had the greatest season to date so far, but Addo Carr's played pretty well this year.
Both wingers played well. For Melbourne anyway, Vunivalu and Addo Carr. Vunivalu got 3 tries, but I mean, there was a lot that I liked for Melbourne. I think they finally started to work out now. They were the side that I said earlier that I was concerned that with these new rules, these 6-again rules, that they were going to struggle, because they're a team that likes to grind a game down, hold the play down, and, you know, just do that wrestle sort of tackle, and they can't do it, which I thought, well, they're going to struggle with this, but they're actually starting to, well, I guess, adapt to it pretty quickly. Yes.
Well, that's what smart teams do. They adapt. Yep. So
that and Bellamy, like the other thing was, sorry, Bellamy just, he just finds these, like Paul Momirovsky? He was the West Tigers center.
Paul Momirovsky, yeah, that's right.
He was the West Tigers outcast center, signed by Melbourne on the cheap. End up getting the most meters, except for Tuivasa Sheck, of course, in the game of 183 meters. He's just, Bellamy will just find these players, these rejects, and just turn them. It's ridiculous.
He does. That's what a good system does.
It's absolutely just, when I keep saying ridiculous, like it's in a good way. It's just, he's like Pappenhausen. Like, Billy Slater gone. Everyone was like going, oh no. Pappenhausen.
Well, it was going to be Pappenhausen or Drinkwater, wasn't it? And they ended up letting Drinkwater go. So you maybe question why, you know, Drinkwater's probably not your quintessential fullback, even though he was playing fullback and playing well at fullback. But Pappenhausen is a 100% better fullback than what Scott Drinkwater is.
But like Cooper Cronk, Cameron Munster was coming through. Cameron Smith, when he decides to retire, Brandon Smith will come.
Grant. If Cameron Smith retires this year, they've got Harry Grant coming back in the Dally M tally right now. And
everyone has massive raps on Harry Grant. Huge raps on Harry Grant as a dummy half. So
you know, Melbourne will hopefully, you know, push Cameron Smith over the cliff at the end of this year, and Harry Grant just steps right in.
My concern is what what he's going to do. Does he want to coach? What does he want to do? I don't know. This is Cameron Smith. I don't know.
No, that's true. I guess a bit unfortunate too with that game with Munster going down fairly early and trying to gut it out. Gut it out the rest of the half. I think he might have got hurt even 20, 22 minutes in, and he tried to gut it out. It looks like that's a medial injury. This is sort of early report sort of coming out. Could be 4 to 6 weeks. So that's a bit of a blow for Melbourne.
It was puzzling because, it was puzzling that he stayed out there because it was, it was coming towards 22 minutes. They were looking pretty comfortable. He didn't need to stay. Once they were, I'm glad they didn't put him on for the second half, but it was puzzling that he stayed on because, he's one of our dynamic players, so.
Oh, absolutely. And, coming from a representative point too, if this was coming into representative season as well, there's just no way that they would have left him out there with that. And, Origin's not going to be till the end of the year, and hopefully that doesn't affect him later on in the year if this injury lingers on. But it just, if this was a different season as seasons passed, then there's no way that they would risk him. But he must, he must have just been brushing off the trainers, going, no, I'm cool. And then once he probably would have sat down in the dressing rooms at halftime, cooled off a little bit and went, uh-oh, I think I could be in trouble here.
What did you think? I mean, there's not a lot of bright spots, I guess, for the Warriors. What did you think of the post stuff that happened with the Cameron Smith? I think it was Ryan Hoffman and Craig Bellamy. They all went in the dressing sheds after and just basically all they did was just basically thank him for their sacrifice to relaunch Anna.
No, that's right. That's literally they're trying it. Exactly. They're trying to lift their
classic
morale.
Classic social media. Just they. Oh, yeah, Cameron no, Smith everyone, got yeah, smashed.
There's a lot of people out there crushing him for it, calling him arrogant and everything. It's like, oh, for God's sakes, people, can't they just go in there and show a show of a good gesture and a show of good faith that, hey, we support you and what you guys are doing. If you guys aren't making the sacrifices that you're making, staying away from your family, staying away from your friends at home and everything like that to get this competition up and running. And we thank you for that. I don't know if there's been a lot out there about what was said in the dressing sheds. I don't think there's a lot of what the subject and everything was, but it's just a classic media beat up. It's ridiculous. It's crazy. People just have got to see the negative and everything, and that
Not to step on it. I mean, I'll bring it up later anyway, but not to step on my studs and duds. But I've never had a stud and a dud that's been intertwined in the same thing. The stud was the Melbourne people going in there and just thanking him. It was a huge sacrifice. It's a sacrifice. But then the dud was just a social media. It wasn't even Bellamy. Cameron Smith, because the video was on him. He's the only that copped it, which is absolutely ridiculous. But it was crap. I'm glad you agree because, the players they just lost 50-6. So of course they were going to look a bit dejected. But
they've just been demoralised. But that's what I mean. Like you said, it wasn't. Yeah, it's just going in there it'd be telling them too. Keep your heads up. Yeah. Just keep your heads up. This isn't going to go forever. That's not as it. I really don't think that it's going to be like this for the rest of the year. Do you know what I mean? That they're going to have to be based here. There's going to surely New Zealand and Australia are going to open up sooner rather than later. Maybe I should rephrase that. Australia and everywhere, Australia and New Zealand, except for Victoria. Because Victoria seems to be going into crisis mode at the moment. So
that might affect the Storm, to be honest. That's the thing.
They might have to uproot themselves and relocate to Sydney. Somewhere out of Victoria altogether.
They already have Sunshine Coast.
So they go
They've had to uproot to Sunshine Coast where their feeder club is because they have no choice. Yeah. So the same sort of thing. They obviously didn't see it coming. I mean, it's going to happen on the AFL side too.
This would have had to have been a quick run in the night. Yeah, holy crap! we've got to get out of here. Hurry up. Pack your crap up. we've got to get out of the state right now, otherwise we could be stuck here.
because I was listening to the game at the end on the radio on the way home, and then Tariq Sims' sister, I can't remember what her name, but
Ruan Sims.
So she was interviewing Cameron after the game, and then basically at the end she said, yeah, you know, good luck living up at Sunshine Coast. So she sort of knew off the bat. But, I mean, look, hey, it's you, same thing what Warriors are doing. You got to do what you got to do.
Right, you got to do what you got to do.
Next game was the other last game that finished Friday night was the Roosters getting a very, very spirited Dragons. It was a great game to watch. I don't know if you watched the full of it, but it was such a good game.
What didn't watch it live, watched the replay of it, and the Dragons were up to their eyeballs in this game.
Yes.
Which I don't think a lot of people seen. All the way until about 10 minutes to go. Really, it was only 20 points to 12 with 10 minutes to go. The Roosters, once again, you know, they didn't have Tedesco. They didn't have Josh Morris. They had their injuries that's happened to Victor Radley and Sam Verrills. That was sort of early in the first half, ACL injuries. No, I'm not buying into it that they're going to be season-ending injuries. I'm not sure if you've heard if they've come straight out and said ruptured ACL, season done. I haven't heard that as of this point in time. I don't think so yet. I'm not going to go out and say yet that, well, that's it, their season's done. But at this point in time, as we're doing this, nothing has come out to say that. It is, yeah, it's a full out blown ACL injuries to both of those guys and their season is over. So, you know, they did well to sort of have a few troops down.
They did, and still get the
W.
Yeah, in Roos's defense there, they, they grinded out the win. They did, but they had a lot of people out. So they rallied a lot better, I guess.
No, that's right.
The thing is too,
by the end of it, the Dragons had 54% of possession.
Mm.
They out of 39 sets, they completed 33 of them. So they played fairly well, mistake-free football. They just didn't. Once again, it's just that the Roosters defensively are just they're gonna challenge the big teams. You know, the Melbournes, the Parramattas, those sorts of teams. The St. George just. Did they really have a chance? To their credit, you know, like I said, you know, up to it in their eyeballs. And for me, like, yeah, it all come down. It pretty much all come down to the last 5 minutes. There was a penalty against the Roosters.
Yeah.
St. George don't find touch. And on that set, the Roosters score. And that essentially shunts them out of the game. Yeah. You know, at that point in time, it was only 20 to 12. So, you know, only being down 8 points with, you know, 10 and then 5 minutes to go, you're still, a realistic shot. But, yeah, when they didn't find touch, that shut them out of the game then.
Evergreen Brett Morris got a hat trick.
Like his 10th or 11th hat trick, something like that. Like, come on. Jared Weir Hargraves and Talke Aho up front, monster.
Well, both centers, I was going to say, they were unbelievable. They had to be. They played 80 minutes, but even Joseph Manu was.
Joseph Manu, playing fullback. It was an admirable, fill-in. Absolutely.
10 meters. It was great for the Roosters to grind out the win. It just shows you what depth they have. And you're right, the forwards, both forwards got, because I was sort of, I've been tracking it now, that's sort of starting to get behind closed, but, and because I'm trying to beat an argument with a mate, tracking the Dally M points, and you're both forwards, yeah, they respectively got the 3-2, because they had to do the 80 minutes, because they lost literally two forwards, they didn't have a choice.
Exactly, yeah, that's right. And the thing is too, you know, you question the depth, like, you know, okay, there, they lose Tedesco, they lose Morris. Oh, and they've just got a guy called Ryan Hall, who's an England international who can't get a run with the Roosters.
Oh, you love it.
It's unbelievable how an England international can just sits on the side. I don't know you know, if there's been any interviews or anything with him to say, oh, you know, I feel a little bit frustrated that I'm not getting any games. He's not getting any game time.
He played unbelievable that game. Yeah, he did. He played nearly 200 meters. Yeah, he did play.
If that was me, I'd be pissed. Like, you've got to be able, they've got to be able to find a spot for him somewhere.
Considering you look at like the buddy John Bateman, but that's a whole different issue. Like another England international that's like pushing. I'm sure. Yeah, you're right. I'm surprised they can't. Look, you're not going to uproot Daniel Tupou. Joseph Minor, Brett Morris looks the goods, but yeah, there's definitely another wing spot there available.
You push somebody into the centres, like, you know, Manu can play in the centres, you play Hall out on the wing. It's unbelievable. Why'd they even get him for in the first place? Like,
I'd
love to know what his contract is.
I agree, because when they got him, he hasn't really shown anything, and that's because he hasn't had a chance. So
has he even played 10 games in the NRL in 2 seasons?
I do not believe so.
I wouldn't think so. It's unreal.
The next game was the first Saturday game. Your boys, the Cowboys, just working out what to do with the Knights, 32-20. But they literally figured out how to beat the Knights. And I'm not saying that, as a Cowboys, I'm just saying that they were the team that figured out how to beat the Knights.
Well, Melbourne figured out how to beat the Knights too, and that's just bashed the living crap out of them. That was just a good old fashioned Northern ambush. That's all that was. Yeah. And Adam O'Brien all week spruiked, we're not going to go up there and take the Cowboys lightly. We don't want to underestimate them. And then yet they proceed to be down 26-0 at the half. The thing that sort of, for me, that sort of woke up with North Queensland was desperation in defense. Like that was the key element to that, especially in the first half. You know, they held Clemmer and Saifidi. Like Clemmer only had 5 hit ups for 55 meters. Saifidi had probably one of the worst games I've seen him play. Like he just looked totally out of sorts. He only had 6 hit ups for 46 meters. I think he had three just horror errors. They just looked out of sorts a little bit. Obviously, once again, to their credit, they come back and put on 20 points in the second half. There would have been conflicting dressing rooms at either side of half time. You know, Greeny would have been pretty happy. Adam O'Brien would have been pretty disappointed. And at full time, whilst North Queensland got the win, he probably wouldn't have been too happy with their second half. Not so much effort, but you know, just that some of the tries that Newcastle scored were a little easy, I thought. Yeah. They come out the first 2 minutes of the first half and Tex Hoy scores.
Yeah.
You just want to say the name Tex Hoy, but
it's because it's a sauce.
Yeah, so that's right.
I love it.
I just want to get me some sauce, but yeah, in the first time Newcastle touched the ball in the second half and they score, so it's just fair enough. North Queensland came straight back and they scored. Cohen Hess scored. It was like 2 or 3 minutes later, so it was a sort of fast and furious first 6 or 7 minutes of the second half, and once it sort of settled down a little bit. They got back in and out of the grind of the game, and I think Newcastle sort of began to dominate and play. You know, they're playing better football at the moment, so I think they began to play that football like they have been all year, except for the blip on the radar against Melbourne. They were just they were horrible against Melbourne. In North Queensland, points scored has never really been the problem this year. It's been that defensive aspect, and they showed a lot of desperation, with a Newcastle side that's a fairly high scoring outfit as well. So I thought they really took Ponga out of that game.
That's what I mean. That was the key.
They totally took him out of the game.
I think that's how they've worked out. Because that's all I heard. I guess that sort of during the game or after the game is. they worked out how to beat the Knights, and beat the Knights was taking Ponga out of the game, and Clemmer and Saifidi too. If you really want to
that's
put,
that's right. That's right. You've got to be able to match. You've got to be able to match them strength to strength up front as well. And North Queensland's got a decent sized pack that can actually do that. But you could tell that it was a totally. It's all well and good to go out there with that plan to take, you know, players like Tedesco, Billy Slater, you know, when Greg Inglis was playing fullback. You know, got guys like that to go out there and have a plan to take them out of the game, but to execute it, and yeah, especially for at least the first half of footy, they executed it flawlessly.
Okay, settle a little debate for me, because this was the debate we had all weekend with the mates here. I already know what you're going to say, but I'm going to ask anyway. So Jason Taumalolo, he gets paid, what, $1 million a season for 10 years? Is that what he gets, $1.1 or something like that?
Yeah, it's a $10 million deal.
He's a $1 million player that plays locked. But he did, again, get 297 metres, 128 post-contact metres, which is absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, it's insane. They love that post. Oh, the footy stats now, they love post-contact. They totally stole that from the NFL. They love that post-contact metres stat. They love it.
The debate is, obviously a seven you will, but do you pay a lock, or if he's your best player in the side and can do what he can do, do you pay a lock $1 million a season?
If his name is Jason Taumalolo?
Exactly what I said. So
yes, I do. It doesn't matter what position he plays.
Yeah.
In these conditions that they're playing under now, he has to play a little bit sort of more reduced minutes. Like, he was still punching out 70-plus minutes even up until this year. Now they say, and they haven't really reduced his minutes that much. They're just giving him another 5-minute sort of blow. They're sort of taking him off after, say, 20, 25 minutes. But instead of leaving him off and let him have half time to recuperate, he goes back on. He goes back on within 10 minutes, and he'll go out there and give his all for the end of the first half, and then will generally play most of the second half. So this, it could change if the NRL go to 6 interchanges, and he may become less effective if they go to 6 interchanges and they just have to say to Jason, look, you have to play the 80 and you have to pace yourself. That could be different. Yeah. Or they're going to have to find themselves another Ironman, you know, at the second row position, or even, you know, someone like, and that's the thing, they've got the perfect storm there as well with Josh Maguire, who can punch, he can punch out 80 minutes. Absolutely he can.
Yeah.
And that's just because Jason Taumalolo is playing 13, and he's a middle forward.
That's exactly what I said.
He's a middle forward.
The guy, one of my mates in question, basically, I agree with him at this point. If you have a very good one, a very good seven, and a very good one, seven, and nine, you pay that kind of money. But then I also said to him, because he was arguing with this other guy about it, you have a once-in-a-generation player like Jason Taumalolo, of course you're going to pay him $1 million. Someone else is going to pay him $1 million.
Have a look.
A seven. Yeah, they've got Valentine's Holmes. Sorry, and yeah. I think Morgan's only going to get paid $1 million.
He's on a fat contract too. Yeah.
So yeah, okay, 179. But if he is a once in a generation player, Taumalolo, you need to pay him that. That's what he just thinks.
Have a look at what the Brisbane Broncos are going to be doing with David Fifita right now. It's the exact same situation.
And he's a Broncos fan, so exactly what I said back to him.
That boy's going to get paid. Payne Haas. They're going to have to pay him. Mm-hmm. Like, that's me. It's a new generation of athlete that it's, Jason Taumalolo's nickname in the squad is Hulk. Like, you know, within good reason. Like, he's just not green, but that's just looks like the new generation sort of forward with those guys that are coming through, that Islander heritage that's coming through, whether it's, you know, New Zealander or, you know, those Pacific Islanders, they're gigantic dudes that are coming through. But some of the things that they can do is just, it's unreal what they can do. And you absolutely, the Cowboys sort of picked this up fairly early with Taumalolo as well. Like, he made his first grade debut at 17.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and, you know, he had sporadic games, and he was 100% big part as a young man in that premiership in 2015. Now he's, I think this could be the third or fourth year of the 10-year deal. So, you know, there's still a long way to go, but he still looks like he's got a lot of kilometers left on the clock.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. So I'm sending this pod straight to my mate just to prove a point, and we're going to go to town on him. But anyway, just because it, you're right. The game's changing. It doesn't matter just because it has the number there. He just thinks basically his theory is if it's a forward's going to get paid $1 million a season. And I want to keep harping on it because we've got a lot to talk about with Broncos and that later. But
Jake Trbojevic is being close to being on $1 million a season along with his brother.
I think if you have those once-in-a-generation players, they deserve to get paid just because they're a forward. And Tom Lomo is one of those players.
It's about being a game changer. Like, yes, mm-hmm. the one, the six, the seven, the nine are generally your guys that are going to have the most impact on the game. Darius Boyd's getting $800,000 a season. He's essentially, a glorified center.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're not going to be paying $800,000, $1 million for a winger. Or a dummy half, unless their name's Cameron Smith. Like, do you know what I mean? It's just what it is at the moment now that you have to identify that generational talent, and it doesn't matter where it is on the field now.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. It's exactly right, and someone's gonna pay him. So if they got the money, it's a $9.3 million cap. You got the money. You need to pay to keep it there because he's the one keeping.
If you want to keep, that's right. If you want to keep him there, then that's what I mean. And then you've just got to be creative with the salary cap.
Next game we'll touch on at the end, but it was a Saturday game between the two Southeast Queenslander teams, the Titans and the Broncos, 30-12. We have a fair bit to talk about that, so we'll skip past that pretty quickly.
We'll just jump past it for a while because like I said, there's a little bit to talk about. So we'll jump to I thought this game was a little bit overhyped by Fox Sports as well, this Parramatta and Canberra game, but yeah. I think it delivered in the last 10 minutes.
Yeah, I totally agree. It was pretty lackluster. I mean, look, it was 12-8 at the first half, but then that last, I'd even probably stretch it out to 15 minutes. It was just, it was that sort of hot potato. They realised they were behind Canberra, and then Nicol Kolstak is just, he's unbelievable.
He scored those two tries in 3 minutes. Like, he's crazy.
I kind of forgot how good he was, if you know what I mean. Like, I know he was good, but I forgot how good he was because there's so many good players in Canberra.
Well, it's seen. There's sort of a few things to sort of go through with this game. Like, Mitchell Moses got hurt. Mm. Canberra up, like you said, 12-8 at halftime, and I thought, all right, this could be trouble for Parramatta. With no Moses there. That second, I don't know if you watched the replay or anything like that. That second try that was scored by Canberra was amazing. Except for the 2 meter forward pass that Jared Croker threw.
Elliot Whitehead scored that. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, you're
but
right.
But that was so slick and so smooth with the kick over the top, the inside outside pass or the outside inside pass, so quick, so smooth. And then you go have a look at the replay and it's a 2.5 meter forward pass. it wasn't even close. Like and the touch judge who's over on that side is Gavin Badger.
It's always been a thing with me that I don't get how you can rule on every other little play that really, to me, there's a couple of them that really don't make a difference, but a forward pass they cannot rule on. That is absolutely ridiculous. You can't rule on a forward pass.
I know where they come from because you can get that optical illusion from the angled camera angles, but that one right there, like that's if that happens in a grand final.
True.
If that happens in a semi-final, costs somebody their season, like that's horrible.
Yeah.
There's got to be a way to be able to accurately to see. And the thing is, too, we probably touched on it before as well, when players are running with momentum and as they throw the ball and then they just go with the stupid blanket rule of, he passed it on the 20-meter line and because the player that was running caught it, at the 20, on the 18-meter line, that means it's gone forward. And it's just like, well, no, it hasn't gone forward. It's momentum. If it's come backward out of the hand and you're running, it's gonna look, not so much it look like it's go forward, but it's just a stupid blanket rule of, oh, the ball was thrown here and caught there, it must have been forward. It's like, no. I don't know if I'm there. There's got to be other people that see that and see that that rule or that ruling on a forward pass is retarded.
I don't know. Technically, the rule is at the end of the day, if it's propelled, that's even grey. If it's propelled at the back of the hand.
That's right. Yeah, it's right. If it's propelled backwards but floats forward, it's okay. It's like all the knock-on BS that they do at the moment. Like, a knock-on constitutes, you know, you propelling the ball towards the opposition's try line.
Yeah.
People have their backs faced towards their own try line. They drop the ball. It goes backwards. The momentum of the ball goes backwards. The ball bounces backwards, but they still call it a knock-on. This isn't the NFL.
it's
ridiculous. You see so many of them, and the players constantly get into the referees about it. So I'm going to knock that back.
Yeah.
And everybody who's got two eyes painted on their head can see that it wasn't knocked on. But they're just trying to make it black and white that, oh, you've dropped the ball. Oh, it must have been a knock on. Like, it's just it's ridiculous. That 100% has to change. It's crazy.
Yeah, I can see where you're coming from.
We got off topic a bit there.
Canberra or Elliot Whitehead. I mean, it looks like he's going to move on after this year anyway, but he had a pretty good game. I didn't end up posting the whole 90 minutes. He played for the 90 minutes, but he was had, you know, two line breaks. He just seemed to be there, if not everywhere, during the game.
High energy dude too.
Yeah. There's a whole thing with that, and we're not gonna have enough time, but there's a whole thing with him with, yeah, he's moving on this year, where he's gonna go, but Stewart's not really a happy person about it because he reckons it's completely agent push. But anyway, that's a whole different issue. We'll see where it goes, I guess.
No, yeah, that's true. Yeah, and I thought Clint Gutherson sort of did really well in controlling that game. In the absence of Moses, so I thought they were shot ducks after he left with that injury.
It just
escaped me there. It looks like it's a torn calf, so he could be that. That could be him for a couple of weeks, because those sorts of injuries are tough to come back from. You know, they've got to make sure that you're 100%. So,
It was a torn calf. It looks like the former Dragon player, Joe Field, will play halfback this week for him. So, it looks like it's torn calf. So, which is interesting because he's been, if probably their best player, I guess, for the year.
Him and Gutherson and the thing too, and yeah, I'll sort of go into it too with my studs of the week, but there was the whole of the Parramatta forward pack, monstrous.
Yeah.
that kept them in the game, like that kept them under control and cool and calm to just have that monstrous go forward by everybody, not just a couple of people, by everybody. So.
It's because they're massive. They're just massive.
Right. Yeah, they're all.
Regan Campbell Gillard is a nice little pickup for him.
He's playing great. Yeah, a few people sort of saying that he was feeling a bit stale, so to speak, at Penrith, this has just given him a new lease on life at Parramatta. So, what did you think of the Horsburgh double bird to the crowd or the non-existent crowd?
I thought it was awesome.
I thought it was fantastic. He was fired up, man. Like he was looking for it.
He was injured. He was emotional from getting injured. Like he wanted to get stuck in the wrong person.
Like he wanted to get stuck into Ryan Madison, and it wasn't him that sort of made the awkward tackle. That sort of I think it's an ankle injury, and he could be out for a few weeks now too. He was looking for it. He just had that emotion, that raw emotion written all over his face. And he just, then it was coming off. And it just so happened too that the cameras were just on him, and then just out comes the double bird. It's like, all right, cool. I don't know who he's going to get that to.
There's nothing to say he's going to get fined or anything, which is interesting. But anyway.
Contrary conduct, maybe?
Maybe, probably from, well, I guess from the NRL, but hey, you know, he was just, yeah, I guess it was a spur of the moment. He was pissed and just one of those things that happened.
It's just one of them things, but you get to see, yeah, that you get to see that there, did you see, he's an emotional guy, and that's just, yeah, that's sort of, you know, a lot of people will go out there and say that that's the kind of guy that you want to play beside, you know, a guy that's just got that raw emotion and will do anything, you know, for the bloke next to him. So,
yeah,
it's unfortunate he's going to be out for a couple of weeks too. So, but yeah, all in all, like Parramatta did what they had to do in the loss of, you know, especially a key playmaker like Moses, did what they had to do to get the W.
Next game was the Sharks, and end up, I guess, putting Manly to the sword, 40-22. I honestly can't say I was that surprised. I mean, watching the game at the start.
Yeah, Manly did well in that first sort of half an hour to keep it at 6-6. Especially with the caliber players that they've got out at the moment. I know George Tafua came back this week. But like we said, you know, you're not paying George Tafua $900,000 because he's a game changer. Like he's a good player and he'll rattle your ribs every now and then. But it's a bit unfortunate that with the players that they've lost.
Yeah.
And especially in the second half. Yeah. DCE didn't look comfortable. A couple of times he got crunched after being after kicking the ball.
Yeah.
Is the 5'8" the Lachlan, is it Lachlan Walker or Lachlan Croker? I think it's Lachlan Croker, is it? Lachlan Croker. He got hammered.
Yeah.
By that Brandon Ewelli after a kick, and it just, oh man, I don't know how the hell he got up from it. Like he just got flattened. I thought the scoreline sort of flattered Manly a little bit. They got a couple of cheeky tries at the end of the game. That sort of made the scoreline look a lot better than what it probably could have, because once Cronulla got rolling, they were really hard to stop.
I was happy purely because that was my first line bet I've ever done on Neds, and it was only paying. So that was my very first line. They were 2.5 underdogs, and I went, "There's no way with Tommy out that the Sharks are gonna lose." I just had that feeling.
I didn't want a piece of any of the lines this week. I don't know why. I just didn't like any of them.
It was the line was 2.5 for $2, but then I also put money on the win. They were paying $2.53 outsiders to win that game.
That didn't make any sense. I don't know what punters were thinking there. Like that just, and the funny sort of stat that come out of that game as well is, I think they said something along the lines of, it's only the third time in the last 20 matches between Manly and Cronulla. So it's only the third win that Cronulla's had in the last 20 matches against Manly. Like, talk about having the wood on somebody. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and Matt Moylan played brilliant in that game. I was actually shocked because I'm not Matt Moylan's biggest fan, but he played brilliant in that game. I mean, Fanua Blake played great. He had to. He had no choice.
He's got no choice.
I don't know. It was just too, you know, Tommy makes a difference. I don't think they realize how much that guy makes a difference in that side. Because you're right. Cherry Evans just looks lost out there in the second half. You're exactly right in that. But
he just doesn't have that set. Not so much steady head, but at least, you know, Dylan Walker, you know, can play 5'8", you know, fairly admirably. Whereas Lachlan Croker's probably not, whether he's played a whole lot in the system or anything like that. So I just, It was just a funny sort of game where I didn't really like the look of Manly in attack. Brandon Elliott comes in to try and replace Tommy Trbojevic, who looks like now with this hamstring tear could be gone for 9 to 10 weeks.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's pretty significant for Manly. And it looks like Dylan Walker, I think we said it last week, Dylan Walker could be out for 4 to 6 weeks, I think, with that high ankle sprain. So
I think they're just on the eight. I think they're gone. Like, there's just too many key players.
No, that's it. Yeah, that's right. They've got key positions hurt and possibly not just, you know, week to week, you know, possibly gone for a long time. So, you know, Fanua Blake and Marty Tapau are going to have to do a pretty bang up job up front.
I just don't think.
Jake Trbojevic as well. You know, Joel Thompson, those sorts of guys that they've got in their pack. You know, it's a decent sized pack, but they've got to be the one to sort of, you know, to have that ascendancy over the other side to give DCE a decent amount of space so he can work some magic.
Next game was the Tigers and the Bulldogs. The Tigers just put the Bulldogs to the sword, 34-6.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed in the Bulldogs, to tell you the truth. Like, after the effort that they put together last week to sort of be a little bit lackluster like they were this week, that was a little disappointing.
Yeah. Yeah, it just felt I don't know. It felt like they had no go forward. I don't know.
Look, Hopper went down, and at the start of the game, all the Fox commentary kept saying was, "Joe, you know, Will Hoppawattie, he's their attacking spark. He's the guy, you know, that's got to get the job done." And within 5 minutes, gone.
I get that, but you're also paying because we were looking at all. This is the whole argument. We were looking at who was getting paid $1 million a year. Foran's getting paid $1 million a year at that club at the moment. And I know they whinge about Milford and all that, but Foran's not definitely justifying $1 million a year.
Well, Foran just hasn't been able to stay healthy. Like that's a Jack Bird situation there. Like, Jack Bird's on what's 800,000 at the Broncos.
950.
And he just can't stay healthy at all.
Yeah, that's true. It's amazing. We'll have to do it separately, but it's amazing when I say the names of who's getting paid $1 million a year. You might be shocked for who's getting paid $1 million.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, I'm sure there's some players in there that warranted, and players that in there be like, oof, what are they thinking?
But yeah, full credit to Tigers. Look, unfortunately, I thought maybe if they don't use Benji, I don't think Reynolds would go so well, I guess, without Benji there. But they're playing a lot better than I thought they would. Honestly, I mean, they're in the top eight. They're six at the moment.
It's probably that Josh Reynolds compliments Luke Brooks better in the halves than what Benji does. I think that's a lot. I think he's that high energy guy that you want in every team, but I just think that's the tough call that Maguire's had to make. He's probably seen that as well. He's looking like a good player to put beside Luke Brooks, who they've been grooming him there for a long time, you know, to be that high end sort of halfback. He hasn't really sort of lived up to expectations. He's a good halfback, but it looks like complimentary wise that Josh Reynolds is going to be that guy that's going to be good for him alongside him, other than Benji Marshall. So the only way that Benji could really get back in there if someone gets hurt.
Well, so I don't think that's going to happen. Harry Grant.
Things happen, but for me, it was a lot too, was second phase play in that game as well. I think the Tigers had like 20, 22 offloads. Something like that, 60% possession. Like, they just stomped all over the Bulldogs, and you know, the Bulldogs just made too many errors, especially coming out of their own half. When they got down the other end, you know, zero execution. You know, a lot of times couldn't even get to a kick on the fifth tackle, dropping the ball, getting caught on the fifth tackle. Like, just not the recipe for success for Dean Pay.
Dean Pay's admitted, like, they didn't have possession, like you said. Dean Pay has admitted he actually admitted this week they finally got the cap in order, which is great, because that was it Raylan Castle that went to the Union and got screwed up the Union as well, just obliterated the cap. They said they finally got the cap in order. They can start playing. Yeah, she is. they can start playing with a bit of money now, and they got that Luke Thompson coming in this week.
But they have I think they say that in this game that he was in transit from Melbourne to Sydney. So, or was that last week? I thought it might have been that he's in the country.
He's been in Melbourne the whole time. His name, I've got the list in front of me. He's named at number 21. So there's a chance he could play. There's a chance because the game is on Sunday and I think it finishes on Saturday. He's in Victoria, which is unfortunate, but that's where
that could be posing a real problem.
Anyway, Dean Pay did admit they need three or four quality players. It's just what they
need at the moment, and
they can do that. So hopefully down the track they can turn around. If you look to me, I think I don't know, maybe forwards. I mean, their foreign contract's pretty ridiculous, but maybe forwards, maybe a dummy half they might actually keep. I don't know.
That is one. I was just about to say that is 100% their glaring need for me is to get a real dummy half.
Well, they wanted Coruscant, didn't they? And he went to.
They did, and yeah, that's right. Yeah, exactly.
They've sort of
spiraled out of, not so much out of control there when at the 11th hour he sort of went and signed with Penrith and not the Bulldogs. So, that is a glaring need for them to have a good controlling dummy half there. You know, Jeremy Marshall King is doing an admirable job, but he's just not a first grade dummy half. It's just not cutting the mustard.
So we'll circle back to the Saturday game, which was the Titans beating the Broncos 30-12. I should have put money on this one too, but anyway.
Yeah, you won't get any sympathy from this little black duck Broncos.
I've got the taste of a win now, so I need to look at all the lines. But anyway, we'll talk about that. That could be a separate pod, just talking about line bets.
The final play pod gambling tips. I don't know if that's going to go
Bill
so well.
Bill Simmons that does his podcast, the basketball analyst. He talks about lines like it's no tomorrow in basketball. he said he watched Gladiator the other day and they were betting on the side of Gladiator, the Russell Crowe movie, and he was getting the itches because they had betting on the side of the movie.
Oh my god.
So that's not good, but anyway,
NASCAR's back. Why can't he bet on NASCAR or something like that? Like, come on.
I don't know, but he said he had the itch when he seen in the Rome Coliseum. But that's a serious game behind. But anyway, we'll start with the positive. I don't know, the positives to me, like the Titans. Yes, they're playing a terrible side. They did have the run of the possession, which was great, 52-48. They played cohesively.
Yeah, that's right. They look good at both ends. To say that Brisbane's attack is a little disjointed at the moment is probably a bit of an understatement. Their team makeup is horrendous. Bench wise, just in key positions. Like I said, the Gold Coast look good at both ends of the field. Attack wise, that they look crisp. You know, Jamal Fogarty looked good. You know, Ash Taylor, you know, showed those flashes of brilliance. Getting repeat sets. I think he set up a couple of tries over the whole game, not in the first half. But the dagger, really, like you probably could have handled going in at, say, 18-0 down, 16-0 down. But the intercept right on halftime by Anthony Don is good. And it said that's a dagger, and that just would have really pissed Anthony Seibold off.
Oh, mate, you can see him when he walked away. Like they played it out like he got pissed and he walked away. But it was the game. He was walking down anyway because it was half time. But
yeah, that's right.
But yeah, like Anthony.
Oh, it's perfect camera timing. Unbelievable.
Oh, of course. Anthony Don had a cheeky look when he got that too, but yeah, that's right. That was just serious dagger to go in that halftime.
Halftime 22-0 down, and all the while too being down to 12 men because Fotowaker got sent to the sin bin with a couple of minutes to go for a BS holding down in the play the ball penalty, you know, six to go thing, and he got sent to the bin, which was just, like I said, in capitals, extremely large capitals with exclamation points all over the place, if you know your Seinfeld references. Just BS sin binning. He did not deserve to go to the bin for that. That was unbelievable that Fodawaker got sent to the bin for that.
Yeah, I agree. Like it definitely warranted a penalty, but it did not warrant a sin bin.
It wasn't as if there was repeat infringements or anything like that. That was just out of the blue, 10 in the bin. It's just like, what the hell is this? And they come out in the second half. I don't know. I just thought the referees were trying everything they could to try and even the penalty count up and to try and get Brisbane. I don't know. That's just that might be that little bit of impartial Gold Coast fan in me a little bit there, but that, they were trying everything they could to try and get Brisbane back in the game.
Brisbane back in the game. That's probably
what they're. But then when Corey Oates gets the penalty against himself for giving the referee an absolute spray while they had possession of the ball for a high shot, which he thought was a high shot. They obviously didn't see it or whatever. And Oates just laid into the referee and then proceeds to get sent to the bin for 10. So not only did he give away possession, he got sent to the bin for 10 for dissent. That pretty much summed up the game then, because the Gold Coast, they score straight after that.
They score straight after it. Yeah, Philip Sammy.
Straight after. That essentially sealed the game. Like, not as if there was going to be a miraculous comeback by the Broncos, but that's just the way that their season's going at the moment.
So what's going on? Like we could say the glaringly obvious that David Fifita is not there. So that's not going to help. He could potentially win them games, so that's not going to help. But the first thing you said was exactly right. Their 1-17 is perplexing what they're picking.
It doesn't make any sense. The bench does not make any sense.
Tommy Dearden, you're right,
comes on and plays 18 minutes.
Yeah.
Rhys Kennedy plays 38 minutes. Ben Teo plays 30 minutes. Jermaine Asako, who's an international, plays 16 minutes.
Yep.
What sort of bench is that in any sort of rugby league? What sort of bench is that? Like a back hooker slash halfback, one prop, and a second rower.
Yeah.
Like that's perplexing. It doesn't make any sense.
And it is perplexing. Like even this week, they've dropped Corey Oates. They've put Tommy Dearden on the bench again, and Jermaine Asako now in the side. I don't.
Just clutching at straws. He's just stabbing in the dark. It's like pin the tail on the donkey. All right, let's just see if this works. You know, with a blindfold on. Oh, we'll just put Asako out at the wing again. Like, you know, he's got the young kid. Is it Nua?
Nui? Yeah.
Yeah, Nua. Yeah, sorry, Nui. At fullback. Xavier Coates, like he's trying to blood the new generation of Broncos, but it's just a lot of people are sort of, again, you know, sort of big heavyweight media types, not, you know, small crummy podcast media types.
They don't know what they're talking about. That's just because they got connections.
Yeah, that's right. Just because they've got some sort of journalism degree, whatever. it's Seabold's scheme has come under fire again. The complexity of it, and whether some players can pick it up and some players can't.
Look, my thing is with Seabold is he had one good year at South. And then he got this massive fat 5-year contract. That the team that he had at South was ridiculous. Like it was a grand final team. Anybody, no, I shouldn't say anybody could have coached it, but he got them to where they were because they had a ridiculously great squad.
That's right. He inherited a grand final winning team essentially.
He does not have that now. We mentioned Darius Boyd probably getting paid what, 800. Jack Bird injured, getting paid $900,950. Anthony Milford $1 million. So there's money tied up to players that aren't executing. Now, that's not all his fault because he's inherited this side. So it's not all his fault. But I like, do they do what Paul McGregor's, what they're doing to Paul McGregor? Like where, you know, Paul, they're pulling out a couple of wins because there's four people picking a squad, not just the one coach. I don't know. I just, they've had the run for so long, and I just think exactly what you've said is they've had the run for so long, they just...
To me, that they're cashing in on the success that they had, you know, as early as, you know, winning a premiership in 92-93, winning the bogus Super League title in 1997, winning the ARL in 98, 2000, 2006. So they've won a premiership since 2006. They've never had to go out and do hardcore recruiting because they've always had just players lining up to be a Brisbane Bronco, and they just walk in and to a lineup of kids and go, righto, we'll have you, and you. The rest of you guys, you can nick off. We don't want you. Now they've actually got to go out and do some, you know, and do some creative and actually, you know, look at guys and go, we've got competition now, you know, he's thinking about coming to us, but he's looking at going to the Roosters, or he's looking going to Melbourne, or if he's a Northern kid, you know, he might want to go to the Cowboys. They're not all just lining up to go, nah, absolutely want to play for the Broncos. And now that they don't have that, the thing, it's a 5-game losing streak. This is the thing that sort of gets up my shirt a little bit too, along with many other things about the Broncos. Thing that gets me, everybody's losing their mind. A 5-game losing streak, right? So, you know, just sort of watching a bit of TV and stuff like that. The last time they had a 5-game losing streak was 8 years ago in 2012. Just as recently as last year, and I think it was a 2017/2018, like the Gold Coast, up until them beating the Tigers a couple of weeks ago, had lost 14 on the trot. The Newcastle Knights a couple of years ago lost 19 on the trot. That is sort of getting to crisis levels.
Yeah.
Not five. Like they got booed off the park at halftime. Like, how spoilt can you be? Booing the Brisbane Broncos off the field at halftime. I get it. It's against the Gold Coast. They're not a very good team.
But this is that luster, like you've said. This is that luster.
It's just being spoiled.
You're right. I agree. But this is that luster that everyone's so used to with Brisbane, and they just don't have it. Bennett's come out this week. Bennett's come out this week fuming that he said, like, you know, you can't blame everything on him. He inherited the side, he said. He technically inherited the side. And he was one of four, which is really – that's why I don't know what's going on with Seibold, because Bennett's admitted he's come out because he wanted to set the record straight. He's come out this week and said, I was one of four people that always picked the roster. I always didn't have the final say, so to speak. There was four people involved with that. So – you know, for someone like Bennett to say that, is Seibold got complete control? I don't know. There's more to it. Clearly, there's more to it. There has to be more to it. You're right. Five games. I agree. 5 games is getting a bit overboard. But
that's totally overboard. Whoopie-doo, it's 5 games in a row. Like, North Queensland probably, you know, after the season that Thurston had, you know, his last season, 2017. I guarantee you they lost more than 5 games in a row. They had a horrible season. Is it crisis talks then?
I don't care about the crisis talks. But my thing is that you pay, you know, you got your Darius Boyd. Yes, I know he's retiring, but you got your Milford, and unfortunately Jack Bird's injured again. But it's Milford. Like, I mean, Darius Boyd, you're right, he's probably just running out for a paycheck. Yeah.
Darius Boyd is playing unmotivated football. Correct. You know, he's like we were talking, you know, before we started recording, he was taken out of the leadership group. He was stripped of the captaincy. His dad, Wayne Bennett's not there anymore. Like, he's just not, it doesn't look like he's just a happy person at the moment. And he's just collecting fat paychecks.
Yeah.
And waiting until the end of the year so he can retire.
So to me then, and which, you know, that's fine. It's
that's as unmotivated as you can get, right?
But Milford to me is
oh that's a huge key. And,
he's
and,
the
you
key.
Know, with contract talks, swirling around David Fifita as well. You know, the Gold Coast looking at making a huge run at trying to get David Fifita. Apparently, he's got a few friends, you know, footballing friends that are at the Gold Coast or are signing with the Gold Coast for next year. So, you know, that could be.
And they can pay him more money.
And then they can pay him more. So, because it's, I mean, they've got, I'm not 100% sure what Matt Lodge is on there. I don't think he's on a gigantic contract, but they're going to have to try and find money for the Payne Husses and the Thomas Fleglers and all these sorts of players that they, the youth movement that they're sort of going with at the moment, that they're not going to be able to fit everybody
They're not. So someone has to drop. For Fifita, there's talk that he might sign just a one-year deal just to help the team. Like, I don't know how why he would do that or how that's possible.
That's crazy.
It's still getting currently talked that he's going to sign a one-year deal. I'm assuming the only reason that I would think he would be doing that would be because of, like, just to see what kind of money is going to come out after next year kind of thing, because of next year it might be a lot less than what he actually can get. But who knows? It's weird that he would do it, but the only reason I could say he would do it, surely not to help, because, man, like,
that's the thing. He's got to look out for himself.
Correct.
I guarantee you that, yeah, if he has any sort of form drop off or an injury history or something like that, the Broncos will drop him like a hot potato. So he's got to look out for himself. And the first person that I always come back to, or, you know, like, especially in recent history, is Kalyn Ponga. Kalyn Ponga was in the 20 squad for the Cowboys. He had two first grade games under his belt. They had said to him, said, look, can you wait one more year? You know, Thurston's retiring next year. This is what's going to have to happen. They couldn't afford to pay him. And yeah, his dad, who was, I think it was his manager then, just went, no, I want my son to get paid now. And Newcastle put up the massive contract for him. So he went, right, I'll see you later. Yeah, he's got to look out for him.
Yeah, I think so. The only reason they're saying it could be a short-term deal is because, one, to see what kind of money is going to be available, because Milford's out of contract as well, and just to sort out his management issues. So, I mean, I don't know. He's a local junior, so he might think there'd be a loyalty thing there. But, I would be absolutely hugely surprised if he stays there. You're right. You'd kiss.
Not a 1 year deal. Like, that's.
Yeah, you'd kiss everybody else goodbye. Payne Haas, Tevita Pangai, Matt Lodge. If he's staying there, then they'll be going. There's no way you could keep all them. It'd be absolutely impossible. But you got Boyd's money to play with, so who knows? But, I mean, it's at least a Brisbane worries. They just. I know it's five. I agree with you. I know it's five losses, and, you know, it's not getting all up in arms about it. But I don't know where they're going to go. I'm not concerned because I've never liked Brisbane. They're the team I've never liked. But I just don't know where. I've never liked Brisbane. I just don't know where they're going to go. I really have no idea where they're going to go.
That's the thing. Where's this recruitment? Where's all the guys that are lining up? All this talent that they should have there, where people just saying, yes, I want to be a Bronco, I'll take less money. You know, they should have depth at these positions, and they don't. They haven't for a long time.
This is what's happening at the Roosters now. That's why the Roosters are playing so well, because they have that luster. The Morris guys.
They're the team with the luster. Melbourne, you know, they're the team that have got that luster about them, that you'll go there for less money. You get put into that system there and you flourish. Whereas by the looks of this, you get put into the system at Brisbane, and all it is, you walk out of it. Yeah, you walk out of a team meeting and you're confused.
That's actually a good point, because that's just the players that are at Melbourne. Yes, they're taking less money, but it's clearly a better system. That's the difference. Sure. It's a Bellamy system that's clearly, you know, has worked and will keep working for years to come, depending on how long he wants to stay there. So, I guess I've already mentioned mine, but your studs and duds of the week? Do you have a stud of the week?
Yeah, like I said there before, that my stud of the week was five blokes was the starting Parramatta pack. just huge. Yeah, Campbell Gillard, 247 meters. Reed Marnie, 57 tackles.
Yeah.
Junior Paulo, you know, 19 hit ups, 180 meters. Sean Lane, who's just, man, he is just, he's a mountain. Holy moly, is he a mountain of a dude. Yeah, nearly 200 meters off 16 hit ups. Madison is starting to play well there. He looks like he's been, you know, he was a high price signing, but he looks like a really good signing. They nicked him away from the West Tigers. You know, he had 15 hit ups, 137 meters. Neokore, 41 tackles and 12 hit ups for 130 odd meters. Like they were huge up front. They needed those guys to lay that good platform without Mitchell Moses there, and to give Gutho as much time as humanly possible. Especially that field goal, he hit that field goal pretty well, and he knew it straight away that it was going over. So, but yeah, I think they were a real essential part of that win against Canberra.
And your dud of the week?
Well, we all know who the dud of the week's going to be. If Seibold just keeps these it's just the interchanges that's perplexing. Like this doesn't make any sense. Like there's nobody playing. You know, there's nobody playing reserve grade, so you can't grade guys on. But Ben Teo has come in and done a great job. You know, he hasn't played rugby league in a couple of years. Yeah, and he's come in and is doing a great job. What happens if they didn't get him?
Yeah, good point.
Where would they be?
Yeah, that's exactly. Yeah, well, I mean, they had no, with Fifita out, they had to. He should be back in a few weeks. But you're exact. Maybe
there is more to Seibold. Maybe he's put something in his contract where he's the only guy that's allowed to select a squad and not have a lot of people outside or inside input, I suppose, if you want to put it that way, from Brisbane. But I think you need it. If you're losing, you need it.
Well, he can't have his eyeballs on everybody at training all at once. He's going to have to consult assistant coaches, coaches that are feeder teams in the Q Cup about, who's going well there. I get it. There's no Q Cup being played. But, you know, if you just go off last year, then if that is indeed what's happening there, that he's the only one that's making the decisions, then it seems a little funny that if he's not giving anybody, any sort of impact or impactful say there at all.
No, clearly not. Yeah, you're exactly. I don't know. I just feel like there's more to, and who knows? Probably until he leaves or changes. There's got to be more to it. There's something not right in that team at all, and I don't know what it is, but there's something not right in that team.
Yeah, it's a bit funny, isn't it?
Well, that'll do it this week for our round 7 coverage of the NRL. Don't forget to follow us on all the socials. Twitter's @finalplaypod, not at the. They couldn't even fit that. And Facebook always is just Final Play Podcast. I can't believe I couldn't even get that out.
At Final Play Pod. Yeah, it's pretty hard to say. Check us out on Gimco as well. We're on there. Yeah, we're on. If you're a member of Top End Rugby League Cards on Facebook, you can find us. I post it up on there as well. Shout out to those guys. Shout out to Dwayne, who lets me put it up on there. So.
It's anywhere that, like, any device. I've tried everybody's device now that I know, and you can have Spotify, you can have Podbean. Doesn't matter which one you have, or you've got to literally do a put in the search and put Final Play Pod, and our pods definitely come up.
Wham. except on Apple.
Yeah. Well, it'll come up on an Apple device, but just not. Through the Apple podcast, so okay, a lot of people have Spotify, so anyway,
I don't know if you're really trying that hard.
I could probably try hard. I'll put it that way.
You're the Apple guru. I don't want anything to do with Apple.
Well, have a good week, everyone. I'm Jason will try harder Smith.
You should be Jason Pro Apple Smith. That's what I mean.
Mate, I'm pro any phone, but anyway.
I'm Miles, not pro Apple Plum. Clearly in the name, it's all about Plum, not about Apple.
No, sorry. You love apples, don't lie.
Oh, no, the fruit, yeah, but not the phone.
Not the phone. Have a good week, everyone.
Yep.
Peace.